This year we're not gonna lose, 'cause we're tired of these Chicago Bears blues. Yeah, come on,
Chicago Bears blues.
This year we're not gonna lose.
Thanks, David. It's the Monday evening quarterback here. 312-981-7200. Extension 720, talking Chicago Bears football. We do not have the Chicago Bears blues. We have the Chicago Bears red. I don't know what it would be, but we are flying high after yesterday's defensive masterpiece by the Chicago Bears, beating the Minnesota Vikings at Soldier Field 16-6. But a lot of storylines have emerged, including the injury to Mitch Trubisky and the bizarre absence of Roquan Smith, as well as the storyline of how the Chicago Bears' depth has become one of the strengths of this team. Adam Hogue joins us, as he does every Monday. He's the man who covers the Chicago Bears for WGN Radio. You can find him at WGNradio.com/Bears, and he joins us. Adam, welcome to... I love when we get to talk after a Bears win. The Bears loss, it just becomes rambly and ranty. But now we can really get into this, and a tremendous win yesterday.
Yeah, 3-1 after the first quarter of the season. That's not the end of the world, and kind of actually what I expected. Now you get a chance to go on the road to London and face a team you should beat in the Raiders, and you go in your bye week 4-1. I think everybody would have taken that.
Yeah. All right, why don't we start with some of the news that happened today. Mitchell Trubisky, sure. Of course, was injured on the first drive of the game. Chase Daniel came in and did a great job, but what's the status of Mitchell Trubisky?
Yeah, so it's kind of what I thought, and unfortunately Matt Nagy didn't give us many details today, although he did not rule Trubisky out for Sunday, which I thought was interesting. But we were given some details reported by Adam Schefter, which is kind of what we were thinking yesterday. He dislocated his shoulder. There's a partial labrum tear. Does not need surgery, which is key. And it's his non-throwing shoulder. So, look, for a quarterback, this is something you can play through. It's similar to what Anthony Miller did last year. You may remember he was playing through something similar all year. And he needs his arm a little bit more as a receiver than Mitch Trubisky does it as a quarterback, right, since it's his non-throwing arm. So, I think that it's probably a pain tolerance issue for this week. My guess is with the bye week coming and what Chase Daniel has shown you, not only yesterday against the Vikings, but last year too, showing that he can get you victories when your starting quarterback is out. I think it makes a lot of sense to sit him on Sunday, sit him, obviously, the bye week coming up, and then have him come back against the Saints in a couple weeks pretty well rested and ready to go, and hopefully that thing's not bothering him too much. That's what my guess is right now, Justin, as what will happen.
Best case scenario.
Been ruled out for Sunday, so
that's amazing.
Yeah, I can't rule that out completely, but it would surprise me if he plays.
All right, well, you had a great column today about throwing a little bit of cold water on the annual tradition of second-guessing quarterbacks, and Chase Daniel did a great job yesterday, and he seemed to be more confident and more it seemed to be more prepared, even though he came in cold, on what this offense was trying to do. But the future is still Mitch Trubisky. There's no doubt about it.
Well, it needs to be. That's kind of what the point of the column was. And you get back to the Super Bowl expectations that were set in the offseason by people like me. Those expectations hinged on the quarterback taking a step to the next level, right? So as good as his defense is playing, and they showed you yesterday your backup can come in and play well, and there are things that Chase Daniel did better than Mitch Trubisky has done so far this season. He looked comfortable. He looked in control. He looked like he was seeing the field better, and at times he was more accurate than Mitch has been. So, I'm not denying any of that whatsoever, and I do think that this team showed you yesterday that they can stomach the loss of their starting quarterback for a while and perhaps still make the playoffs without Mitch Trubisky. But when you're going to get into a game with the New England Patriots or the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl, you're going to have to do a little bit more. That's going to happen down the road even this season. Like when the Chiefs come to Chicago in December, you're going to see that. So it's great that you have a good backup, and it's great. I'm not taking anything away from what Chase Daniel did yesterday, who, by the way, is in his 11th season, and if he starts on Sunday in London, it'll be his fifth career start. Okay, there's a reason for that. And so I love that he knows the system. I love that he looked comfortable. I love that the game didn't look like it was too big for him yesterday. Those are all positives. But if we're talking Super Bowl, that's what I'm talking. That's what I'm writing right today. It still hinges on the quarterback taking his game to the next level. And if we're going to talk about the potential of Mitch Trubisky versus Chase Daniel, it just still has to be Mitch that has to be that guy.
Yeah, and there's so much to be made about the potential. But the takeaway, I think, for Bears fans is that there was a question of whether or not it was Mitch Trubisky who was missing his keys and possibly missing his throws, or if it was Matt Nagy and his offense defense is adjusting to it. Watching Chase Daniel yesterday execute the game plan, you recognize a little bit of the potential of this offense, meaning he was spreading the ball around. Maybe he had limitations in how he was, you know, tossing the ball up there at certain points, but you got a vibe that this is how it's supposed to go.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Now, I also think it's fair to point out that they only scored one touchdown, and it came on the first drive of the game, in which Chase Daniel got thrown out there in the middle of it. And as tough as a situation that is for the backup, it's also tough on the opposing defense that has not prepared for that quarterback all week. Now, I still think the Bears were doing most of the same things, but I do think that, go back to week one and what we heard from the Packers and them saying after the game, well, we wanted to turn Mitch Trubisky into a quarterback. Well, you know, that can be the case if you're tricking that quarterback, that quarterback's not reading the field correctly and making mistakes. And that's not what we saw from Chase Daniel yesterday.
Right.
He came in there and seemed to know exactly where the Vikings were going to be, where the open holes were going to be. And I'll get back to, and I think this was in my column today too, you know, in this offense, Matt Nagy is almost always going to give you a solution to almost every play if you read it correctly. And that's what we saw from Chase Daniel. So There's a lot of layers to this quarterback story, and we know how much talent Mitch Trubisky has, but there's no question he needs to get to that level where he's reading the field better. And I'm not going to dismiss an argument that has been out there today that maybe it's not the end of the world for Mitch to sit a couple weeks and see things from the sideline and go through that process. And I think there could be some benefit there. And I also wonder if that's going to be a factor in why you shouldn't force him out there on the field on Sunday in London.
Well, there's not much to talk about when it comes to the offense, so we'll stay here before our first break. And then the rest of it is just about how awesome the defense is. But Allen Robinson has really emerged as a go-to, if not elite, wide receiver. This is what we thought we were getting for Jacksonville. He came off a knee injury. But this year, even with the offense struggling, it seems like he is the only option that fights off his corner, that fights off the coverage, and goes and gets the ball.
Well, he's a great route runner, first and foremost, and he's such a professional. He does not come with that diva label that so many number one wide receivers have. He's just a technician out there in the way he runs routes and gets open. And then there, of course, are times, because he's not the fastest, most explosive wideout in the entire league, where he, you know, the separation isn't enormous, and he still needs to go up and make a play for his quarterback, and he does that too. So you see that toe drag on that one catch along the sideline?
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you got to practice. You got to practice balance and concentration and somehow catching the football as you're keeping your feet, knowing where you are on the field. That comes with experience. So Allen Robinson has emerged in such a good player. And whenever you see a guy have 7 catches on 7 targets, you know, that 100% there on his targets turning into catches, that tells you he's doing something right. And he's such a good wide receiver, and he's such a good influence in that locker room too. An amazing pickup for the Bears in free agency last year.
And you have to say, 7 targets, 7 catches, a lot of those are difficult catches. These are not sort of catch and run. These were throws that were high to the wet. A lot of stuff that we're used to seeing receivers drop, bobble, or not come down with him. He's making big plays on third down. This kid has become sort of the go-to guy on the Chicago Bears offense, no doubt.
And that big shot they had down the left sideline on the first drive of the game that led to the touchdown, that's something they had installed throughout the week that they liked. And you know, you're talking about a backup quarterback coming in who was not the guy practicing that during the week. But he knows, because he's done his homework, and he knows how reliable Allen Robinson is, that play's going to be there. So didn't practice it all week. It was Mitch Trubisky who practiced that play. Chase Daniel comes in there cold, knows Allen Robinson is going to be there, knows it's going to work, knows he's going to be in the right spot, throws the ball, catch. It leads to a touchdown.
Wow. I love hearing that. Yeah. Love hearing
and,
that.
And that goes back to what we started this segment with, which is, you know, having that trust in your backup quarterback to not only read the defense correctly, believe in what they worked on during the week, and then make the throw, too. You got to do that. And I just somewhere with Mitch Trubisky so far, there's been a little bit of disconnect and all that coming together. I still think it can happen, but it was refreshing to see a quarterback come in there and just look so comfortable.
312-981-7200. It's the Monday evening quarterback. 312-981-7200. Adam Hoge is on the line, and he can find all his great stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. When we come back, let's talk about this amazing Chicago Bears defense, which is not just the best in the NFL right now, but I would say the best in the last decade. Just watching them play. I know I'm a homer. I get it. But just watching them just create complete chaos on the defensive side of the ball, every single snap is just, it reminds you of better days in Chicago when it comes to football. So we'll talk about the defense coming up here on the Monday Evening Quarterback. Stay with us. It's the Monday Evening Quarterback here on Extension 720. I'm Justin Kaufman, and Adam Hoge is with me at WGNradio.com/Bears for all of his stuff, columns, podcasts, and everything he does. You can also follow him on Twitter at Adam Hoge. 312-981-7200. But let's talk about this defense. I threw it out at the beginning of the show, Adam. This concept, when we talk about Khalil Mack, I would say right now, and it's a small sample size, but maybe the best defensive player the Bears have ever seen. I know that I'll get a lot of old-timers who call up right now being like, you weren't alive for Bill George, or you weren't alive for the 1963 teams and stuff like that, but oh my gosh, I cannot... In 2019, to watch him bull rush two 350-pound offensive linemen, and at the same time be able to be agile to get around them, it's a work of art.
It really is, and that's a great way to put it. You know, I remember at some point last year making a similar comment, and I think the way I phrased it is, when Khalil Mack's time is done with the Bears, it would not surprise me if he's the best player to ever play. At least on the defensive side of the ball, all respect to Walter Payton, obviously, on the offensive side, but to be the best Bears defensive player ever. It's certainly in the realm of possibilities after what we've seen here now in a season and a quarter. And it's like the way you put it, the way he can bend around a left tackle, Riley Reiff, to make that first strip sack and get the ball out there so quickly, and to see a guy like that have basically no chance. Then he comes back later in the game, and he's double-teamed, and he's held, and he goes right through them and still gets half a sack on the play. And this isn't the first time we've seen this. You know, we saw the butt sack last year. Remember that?
Right.
You know, there's every single game, this guy is doing something that is highlight-worthy. Then what the coaches love is all the stuff he's doing on the plays that you don't even really even notice him.
You realize his impact on the running game. I mean, he sets the edge. A lot of the running success has been the fact that Khalil Mack shuts down anyone coming his way.
Absolutely. Whether it's usually, you know, Eddie Goldman in there in the middle, who, by the way, is taking on two blocks all the time and cleaning up plays, or Roy Robertson-Harris, or it's Danny Trevathan coming in there unblocked, or yesterday it's Nick Kwiatkowski filling in for Roquan Smith. I mean, how many, you know, not to take anything away from what Danny Trevathan is doing this season, he looks outstanding. But how many times has he come in there completely clean to make a play? You know what I mean?
Right.
That's due to what they're doing up front. That is due to what Eddie Goldman's doing, and you bring up a great point against the run that that Khalil Mack, and I'll give Leonard Floyd a lot of credit too. He's been really good against the run now for a few seasons, and he's getting better as a pass rusher. Khalil Mack is just so good. I think right now he is the leading candidate to be Defensive Player of the Year. It's always hard, you know, it's going to be hard to unseat Aaron Donald, but right now he's the leader in the clubhouse, and what he's doing on this defense, which somehow might be better than last year's defense. It's so impressive.
Now, again, I'm a homer, but you know, Aaron Donald's defensive unit that he leads gave up 55 points to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home yesterday. To watch this game when your quarterback goes down and you can have a shock, you could be, you know, everything could be out of whack. You don't have Akeem Hicks, you don't have Roquan Smith, which is a surprise, and we'll get to. But the fact that Khalil Mack steps up in a game like this, I would go beyond Defensive Player of the Year. He is MVP. And this defense is not the same without this guy. And he stepped up, and the whole game, they should have lost this game. The way Chase Daniel kind of dinked and dunked, and they put 16 points up against the Minnesota Vikings, the number one running defense or offense, they should have lost this game. But instead, they shut them out.
Well, look, you're facing the number two rushing offense in football right now. 193.7 yards was the average that the Vikings had piled up on the ground in their first three games. They get 40 yesterday. 40!
Jeez, I mean, that's amazing.
And so there, you don't have Akeem Hicks out there. You don't have Roquan Smith out there. And let's not forget about Bilal Nichols, who missed his second straight game. He's a really good defensive lineman, too. These guys are out. There would have been every excuse in the world if all of a sudden the Bears had given up, you know, let's say like 150, right, to Dalvin Cook. And by the way, their backup, Alexander Madison's pretty good too. That would have been not necessarily acceptable, but understandable if it happened. Nobody would have been like, oh, this defense is broken. You know, they had guys out, they faced some adversity, and they just couldn't quite slow them down. And yet the opposite happened. And Khalil Mack, all last week, his head coach was talking him up like he's taking his game to, you know, an incredible level that we've never seen. And yet he does it again with all these guys out. And now he's facing his former team in Oakland. And it's like, how is it even possible to take his game to the next level? And yet, we all expect it to happen. I mean, if you're John Gruden right now in the Raiders, you have to be so scared about what this guy's going to do to you on Sunday in London. And it's really somehow not going to be surprising when he comes out there and does whatever he does, which will probably be like, you know, two forced fumbles, at least three sacks. Can we go ahead and set the over-under of sacks 2.5 on Sunday? That might even be low.
Yeah, I don't know how he's not Defensive Player of the Week this week again. It's tremendous. And I get it. And we're going to talk about the defensive scheme, because I think the next question, well, maybe we'll do this after the news, just this concept that there was this thought that perhaps the Bears would take a step back when it came to their defense because Vic Fangio was leaving and Chuck Pagano was coming in. We didn't know. He hasn't been a coordinator for years. But I want to ask you, Adam, and we'll tee this up for after the break, but I want to ask, like, what do you see the difference? Like, is Chuck Pagano doing different things, or is this just, you know, this team is so comfortable with their scheme? Because it seems to me that maybe Pagano has found a way to use these linebackers to find the open space where Vic Fangio wasn't.
Well, I think there are some wrinkles in there that are certainly working, but the biggest thing I think Chuck Pagano has done with this unit is not change a lot. Just continue to develop the players and put them in positions to succeed. I said this going in, the biggest reason why I did not buy any of this regression talk was because, one, in the offseason, I saw that these guys were buying into what Chuck Pagano was selling. Okay, so that's key. And now, if they didn't buy in and we could see that, then I would have said, okay, there might be some problems here. But they were buying in. Then I look at the roster, and I look at the depth chart, and I see how many guys on here that should not regress, that should only get better. And I'm talking about guys like Roquan Smith, who all, oh, by the way, you know, I'm sure we'll get into this conversation about whatever happened yesterday, but even in the first three games, hadn't really even taken that big of a step as I thought he would. And that's just one example. But you talk about Eddie Goldman, still young. You know, Akeem Hicks has actually been battling through an injury, but Khalil Mack's taking his game to the next level. Kyle Fuller's still young enough that ascending.
He's having a great year.
Leonard Floyd. I mean, I go through the whole defense, and at a minimum, they've all been at least where they were last year, if not due to injury, because I would say Akeem Hicks is maybe a small, you know, exception, but he still played really well despite his knee injury. And then the new pieces coming in, like Ha Ha Clinton Dix and Buster Screen, I mean, they're plugging into a great defense, and nothing has been lost here. And that's what I expected to happen, which is why I did not think that they would regress. Did I think they'd be better? Well, you could make an argument right now that they're actually better through four games. They've been absolutely outstanding, and now the question is, can they just maintain this for the rest of the season?
Obviously, the injuries, when we talk about Akeem Hicks, you know, you heard Nagy today in the press conference say he could have played. Yeah. So again, and you know, I don't know if it's the injury, the people who work in the training room, or just the way this coach philosophy is, but it seems like they're doing load management on these players. They did it last year, where you saw Khalil Mack take a couple of games off, and Mitch Trubisky got hurt, he took a couple games off. But this idea that perhaps that they look at it almost like baseball or basketball, where you don't have to play all 17 games.
Yeah, I mean, because it is a long season, and you want to be peaking in January. You don't want to be peaking in September. So, you know, I think you're right. You know, you look at some of the ways they handled injuries last year, you push it to the point you can't. So Khalil Mack gets dinged up against the Dolphins. He wants to play. They say, all right, we're playing the Patriots this week. Let's get him out there. Let's see what he could do. Well, wasn't quite himself. Probably gave you enough, but you didn't win the game. Now you got the Jets and Bills coming up. This I'm talking about last year now, and they sit him, and they get him right. And right. For the rest of the season, he's great. Now, I'm not saying Akeem Hicks, is this knee thing's going to go away, but I do think it was smart to sit him. I'm sure he's going to continue to battle through this thing, but let's see if he can improve. Because right now, Trey Burton with his groin has been improving week to week, and that's what you want to see here right. with Akeem Hicks, and probably Kyle Long with his hip issue too.
All right, let's take a break for the news. But 312-981-7200 if you want to get in the conversation with Bears insider Adam Hoge. You can get all of his stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. We'll continue. We're going to talk more about the defense. I just think that they deserve it. We shouldn't even be talking about the offense. Just talk all defense all night long on the Monday Evening Quarterback. Stay with us.
Come on! Rush him, blitz him, sack him, low. Rush him, hit him, crack him, bold. Bears is here, what? Bears is here, what?
Beats by Pete Zim there. It's Monday Evening Quarterback here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Adam Hoge with us, WGNradio.com/Bears. Before we get back to the awesome talk of the amazing Bears defense, just a quick note that the WGN softball team that was playing tonight, without myself and also Pete and Adam Hoge, who's on injured reserve, won in the semis and are heading to the championship. So they're going to play next week against the Reader for the 16-inch Media League Softball Championship. How about that? Huh? Congratulations.
That is awesome.
How about that? First year in the league. Back, we took a couple years off. Defense wins championships, Adam, 13-1 in the semis. Only give up one run in 16-inch softball. Unheard of.
Every week you guys mention these scores, and I've played enough 16-inch softball in my life to know that you're never held to, like, under four runs, and yet every week it seems like it's a score like that.
Well, it's all about defense. You know this, and, you know, that's what we preach. It's a lot of you boot a ground ball, you got to do push-ups. That's what we do over at the WGN.
Accountability.
What happened to Roquan Smith? What was this? What is it? There are theories all over the internet, and Matt Nagy was very peculiar today at his press conference. Roquan Smith, a late scratch in the game for personal reasons.
All right, so here I'll tell you what I know. First of all, just handling this from a football perspective, we get a guy who, you know, 90 minutes before kickoff, wasn't on the injury report all week, suddenly doubtful and, you know, not ruled out, but doubtful for personal reasons. Very odd. Doesn't happen a lot. You know, we had the situation last week with Bobby Massey, similar in that. But they didn't even announce anything. He was just suddenly inactive out of nowhere.
And they said he was sick.
And then he had vertigo, which makes sense. Offensive lineman, you need to be balanced. Okay, fine. He had vertigo symptoms. There was an explanation. There was no explanation yesterday, and there was no explanation given today for Matt Nagy. And it is definitely worth noting, asked point blank, did Roquan Smith have a legal issue on Saturday, the day before the game, the night before the game, however you want to look at it. He, once again, Matt Nagy gave the same thing. It's personal issue. So that's not a deny, or you know, he didn't deny it.
He got an upset enough of the questioning that he did a little mini walk off at the end of his press conference, and it just seemed to me, Adam, and you've covered Matt Nagy, but there was a great question from one of the reporters about you've been pretty transparent, you've avoided the Bill Belichick style of press conferences, yet this one was not.
Yeah, so that tells you something happened here. You know, whether it is personal. Whether it is, you know, at this point, if it was something like a sudden death in the family or something like that, I mean, one, Roquan Smith probably wouldn't have been on the sideline. And
so he was at the game.
He was at the game. He was on the sideline, and there wouldn't be so much ambiguity about his status for this week. I mean, asked multiple times about him, Roquan going to London. Again, those questions were being dodged. So whether it was legal or not, something happened. And in it, well, I don't know if it's going to come out or not, but there could be an issue of, you know, team discipline or something like that, and how this is handled this week. We're going to have to find out more, and we'll have access to the locker room tomorrow. So will Roquan Smith be in there? I don't know. I do know he was supposed to be in an event tonight in Park Ridge, and I do not believe he was there with the Bears. So that's, you know, something that's notable too. Let me address what has been going on Twitter now with this car and this accident, and the only way I can do it is look at it separately, okay? Because it's reached a big enough peak that as reporters we have to look into it. So I did look into it. I know not the only one who has looked into it. Here's the deal: this car, this Ferrari that parked into that hit a parked car the other night, according to photos that were on Twitter that, you know, oddly now those accounts are protected. I don't know why, but they are on Twitter. Anyway, that car has Texas license plates. Roquan Smith's from Georgia. You know, we did our due diligence, what you do as reporters, and as far as we can tell, that car is not registered to Roquan Smith. That does not mean that he could not, you know, he possibly could, you know, wasn't, he could have been driving the car. Mm-hmm. It's a possibility, even though it's, but it is not registered to him. Also, at this point, there is no evidence of any kind of police report involving Roquan Smith. Again, that doesn't rule out the possibility that something happened, that there's some connection there. But at this point, as of now, you know, doing our due diligence as reporters, the, you know, connecting those dots, we have not been able to connect them yet. And until we do, that's just all speculation, and it's out there. But it's not being ignored. I'll just tell people that. We're working on this, and that's all I can say.
Beyond the specifics of this case, which is, you know, obviously everybody wants to get to the bottom of this, and in this world we live in now, there are internet tools to do so.
Sure.
So it feels like that's what's happening here. But more about how the Bears are reacting to this. Matt Nagy today and it's personal, very Bill Belichick-like responses to this. What does it mean if it comes out tomorrow that there was something legal or there was something that Roquan Smith did that was unseemly for the organization that they waited 2 days and stonewalled reporters in the meantime?
You know, I don't know. It like anything else, it means that there's added context here. You know, and until we know what really happened, it's hard to say. But you know, if something does come out and all of a sudden there is you know, a legal issue that is confirmed and there is a police report about something, there are questions about, you know, why did that take so long, what really happened. Of course, all that stuff is going to have to be investigated and asked. Of course, maybe there's not. I mean, that's the other thing, context within the player too. You know, I found it was interesting. I saw this on Twitter today too, that apparently Adam Schefter, who's obviously you know, probably the best reporter that covers the NFL, was doing a radio guest appearance today and mentioned something about Roquan Smith not acting like himself recently. That was interesting, you know. So is there something deeper going on here with the player in which, you know, as long as he didn't cross a line, as long as he didn't break the law, which, again, we don't know if that happened or did not happen, maybe there's an explanation for what's going on here. That's the kind of stuff that, until there's more context given, we cannot jump to conclusions. And all we know is, look, as a reporter who's covered this team from a football standpoint, this is an odd situation. It's very different than a player just experiencing a sudden death in the family that needs to be addressed, and a player missing a game, which does happen. Mike Davis this past week had personal things at home, and he wasn't suited up yesterday either. So it's not even – there was actually another teammate on the team that had something like that happen.
Right.
This is different. It's much more mysterious, and the way the Bears are handling it, the way Matt Nagy's answering questions, it's way different from anything we've experienced with this head coach in the last year and a half.
Well, let's take it back to the field. Roquan Smith is, of course, one of the stars of this defense, and is one of the better linebackers in the NFL. There were some questions when he was inactive, at least in my head as I slunk into my chair, that they would not be able to find production from the backups, including Nick Kukowski, the backup linebacker, who we've seen plenty of in his time with John Fox. wow, what a game for number 44. And I guess the question is, you know, is this just, again, is it about the coordination? Is it about the scheme? Is the middle linebacker in that position, that 44 or 58 or 59, whoever plays it, is this just feast time for that position?
Well, first and foremost, you give credit to Nick Kwiatkowski for coming in and on short notice. You know, I talked to him after the game. This was not something that was expected. You know, again, whatever's going on with Roquan, now I think schematically you could look at things and say that maybe they were prepared for it, but you know, Nick Kwiatkowski told me he did not really know what was going on and that he was going to have to play a lot until basically we did as reporters. So short notice, same thing like Chase Daniel came out and performed and, you know, was outstanding. What I will say is, like, compare this Nick Kwiatkowski, who's now in his fourth year, compared to when he was a rookie and had to fill in. And I believe he started some games, especially in his, you know, at some point in his first two seasons. The defense wasn't what it is now. And so he's got better pieces around him. He's got, you know, Khalil Mack, the multiplier, is what they call him.
Right.
And he makes everybody on the field better. So credit goes there, too. But, man, when you see that guy, you know, get one sack with a swim move on the running back, right, who's in pass protection, and then that sets up what he does the second time, which is just run the dude over and, like, toss him. He just tossed him aside.
Tossed him into Kirk Cousins.
Exactly. Forced him up in the pocket. Somebody else cleaned it up. That, for a guy who hasn't really been in that position a lot over the last couple seasons, because he's really only out there, you know, you can practice it all you want, but you're out there on special teams during the games to come through and deliver. I mean, that was real stuff. That's
real.
Him one-on-one winning battles with real technique and power and NFL ability.
And a high IQ. I mean, both you saw that from Khalil Mack, and you saw it from Danny Trevathan, I think, against the Redskins, where he did that kind of fake blitz, and then he came in. And same with Kwiatkowski yesterday. To be able to fake a guy and then bull rush him, that takes a lot of just IQ. IQ.
Right, and look, he's got some issues in coverage that he's just never... He's not Roquan Smith. He doesn't have Roquan Smith's speed and athleticism. He has enough speed and athleticism to be in the NFL, but there is going to be some drop-off there. So sometimes in coverage, and you saw it early in the game, he's matched up against Irv Smith Jr., tight end out of Alabama, the rookie who's got some potential for the Vikings, and he got beat. But, you know, against the run, he's solid, and he obviously showed a knack for blitzing like all these inside linebackers seem to have with these pieces around them. And it was just a really impressive performance.
Monday evening quarterback, 312-981-7200. Adam Hoge, of course, with us. When we come back, we'll talk about the schedule coming up and what we can expect. And I just want to ask one question about just the overall tone of football in Chicago. I mean, we're comfortable with this. And I'll elaborate a little bit when we come back and wrap up with Adam Hoge and the Monday Evening Quarterback here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's the Monday Evening Quarterback with Adam Hoge. WGNRadio.com/Bears. 312-981-7200 is the number. All right, Adam, as we wrap up here, and we've got a couple minutes left, you know, something about Chase Daniel at quarterback and watching how the crowd at Soldier Field got revved up for every Dalvin Cook stuff or you know, any big sack that the Bears defense had. It reminded you of, if you're a newer fan, it reminded you of Rex Grossman and Kyle Orton, or Jay Cutler and Josh McCown, or I can go down the list, right? Yeah. Shane Matthews and Jim Miller, or Cade McNown, or Jim McMahon and Steve. I mean, down the line. And I don't know what it is about this town, but it seems like we're comfortable here. This is supposed to be a new offense and a new wrinkle, and it's supposed to be an offensive team, but we found our ways to finding a team that has the best defense in the league and scores 13 points.
Yeah. I don't know how this happens. I really don't. I mean, in this case, you had, you brought in Matt Nagy. That's the biggest difference here, is you went out. And, I mean, I guess they tried this with Mark Trestman, too, you know, getting the innovative offensive mind. But this has a different feeling, because no one's really questioning the scheme. Like, in the past, when we've had these situations, great defense, it's not always been about just the quarterback. It's usually about the offensive coordinator, too.
Right, John Shoup. Like, right.
John Shoup. We're on the same page right, there. Right, you know, right. You know, the OC's getting hammered, too. No one's really doing – I mean, obviously week one was an exception, and Matt Nagy, I thought, got a little exposed in that game. But I've also been writing and talking about the last couple weeks how impressed I am with how his game plans have looked and how they've been the right game plans to win the game despite some limitations out there offensively and with your quarterback. So
is he becoming a different kind of coach because of these limitations? Is he understanding how to win these close games? He's not the kind of Kansas City, you know, run and gun kind of stuff he came from, or the quarterback whisperer he was supposed to be. Is he learning as a head coach? He's got to win these games 16-6 or squeak one out in Denver and that kind of thing?
Well, I think he is, and I think he's doing so reluctantly. I don't think he likes it. I mean, I think in his mind, he would love to have this high-flying offense that's scoring a ton of points and throwing the ball a lot, because that's who it is in his blood, to be aggressive, to take big shots, to, you know, have all these trick plays and high-octane offensive strikes. But that's why I've also been so impressed with the game plans the last 3 weeks. I think he realizes that he doesn't have that right now. He can't do that. And so, you know, in a league that is so filled with high egos and guys who are stubborn that fail to adapt as coaches, for him to kind of go against his own grain here and to go against. He's still being him as a coach, but he's understanding the limitations offensively and understanding what he needs to put out there with his offense every week to win these football games and develop this thing slowly throughout the year. I've been really encouraged by that because I've just seen too many coaches, whether it's the college or NFL level, who are just too stubborn to adapt, and they end up losing too many games because of it.
Yeah, and you see him adapting for sure. I mean, this was a run-the-clock kind of game, and obviously even before Chase Daniel came in. All right, so let's get to what the Bears are looking at. They go to London to play the Raiders. And, you know, after week four, we saw the top teams in the league, whether you include the Vikings in that, or at least in the NFC, the Packers lost. You saw the Cowboys, I don't even know what that was, on Sunday Night Football. You saw the Saints not score a touchdown and win the game. But you saw the Rams get beat by the Buccaneers at home. All these teams that we were, after week one with the Packers, saying that we had no chance to stay with, I can't think of anybody in the NFC that the Bears should be scared of, especially if they're playing at this level defensively.
Yeah, I thought the Cowboys had kind of been separating themselves a little bit, but then you're right. You know, they had that game last night, and I was working through most of it, so I don't really know. I haven't gone back and really seen the particulars of what unfolded. I just know that it was kind of a weird game. It's the Bears are there. You know, they have a chance, and I go back to, you know, last week I ranked the NFC North, the teams, and what I'd seen so far, and I've seen every NFC North game at this point, except for a little of the Lions-Chargers game a few weeks ago. And I ranked it Vikings, Bears, Packers, Indians. They're all really, really close, it seems like. But I had the Vikings at the top mainly because offensively, despite some of the limitations with Kirk Cousins, they were running the ball so well that they looked like they were, you know, clicking on offense. But I also questioned going into this game this week, is this the best we're going to see from the Vikings right. All season? You don't want to be peaking now. And maybe after what we saw yesterday, and granted it's against this great Bears defense, the answer to that, I think, in Minnesota right now is yes. Are they really going to be any different the rest of the season with Kirk Cousins at quarterback? And they have no other option. That's where I still think the Bears right now. It's frustrating to watch this offense sometimes, and they obviously need to improve. But they have the room for an improvement, and they have a good offensive coach, I think. And so that's where, if this thing keeps climbing, even if it's slowly, this could be the team in the NFC North, and maybe the NFC, as you're drawing this up, Justin, that is peaking at the right time.
It's amazing, and to think about where we're at in just 3 weeks' time. What can we look for? I mean, Hakeem Hicks, as you mentioned, Trey Burton, Roquan Smith, Mitch Trubisky. Should we expect the same kind of production from the backups coming up here in London?
Well, I think defensively, yes. To me, the bigger question is if Mitch does not play on Sunday, can Chase Daniel duplicate this performance, which was just enough to win? He's not facing as good of a defense, which is encouraging. But, you know, last year you had that game. He's played two games in a row, and the game in New York the following week against the Giants didn't go as well, and he made some more mistakes. The defense also coughed up some points in that game. So I think as long as the defense plays at the same level, they can win with Chase Daniel, and they certainly should beat the Raiders. Obviously, this Roquan Smith situation needs to get figured out in the next couple days.
Adam Hoge, always great, man. And always great to talk to you after a win. You know, I just feel like it's just much more joy.
Well, let's keep it going then. How about that?
How about it? You can find all Adam Hoge's stuff. Are you going to London, right? You're going to follow them to the to Big Ben?
I am. I am leaving Wednesday night, and it should be a fun week in London. And, you know, we'll have to figure out the logistics next week to get this done again. But I think it will be after a win. I think they're going to be fine against the Raiders.
All right, boy,
John Gruden has to be scared of Khalil Mack right now.
I love it. Adam Hoge, you can find all his stuff at WGNRadio.com/Bears, and he's here every Monday night with the Monday Evening Quarterback. See you next Monday, Adam.
All right. Thanks, Justin.